Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. I'm really excited to bring you my guest today, Brad Passion. Brad Passion. We were just discussing the correct pronunciation of this. He's the a regional business manager from the Midwest with ProFarm. And I am really excited to glean his years of experience and his take and his attitude towards intentional leadership. So Brad, welcome to the podcast today.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Let's dive right in. What does it mean for you to be intentional?
You know, when I look at intentional leadership, it's all about making deliberate choices that reflect really what's the most important things to us. And when we are intentional like this, we remain much more focused with the clarity that, you know, we need to keep that positive mindset, you know, that we can have then to go ahead and reach our goals. And it's, to me, it's staying committed. You know, when you're committed and you're all in, whether it's your family or your business or your faith, then that brings a lot more meaning to your life, and it makes it real. So that's really what it means to me.
I like that. And you know, I've had a few guests over the all the recordings of this podcast so far talk about making deliberate choices, that it is a deliberate choice. Being intentional requires that. And I agree. I think it's at least one part of the filter that we should look at intentional leadership through. Why do you think so many people struggle, though, with the ability to execute on being deliberate?
I think it's pretty simple. I mean, there's a lot of distractions out here in this old world. And, you know, if you are not real deliberate in the choices that you're making, and you let someone else dictate your time, then you're never going to, you know, hit the target. You know, it's more of a ready, fire, aim approach versus, you know, putting a stake in the ground and saying, here's where I'm at and here's where I'm going, and, you know, doing everything you can to stay on track.
Yeah.
You know, it makes a big difference.
It's so true. And it's one of the reasons that I'm making the podcast, because I think there are a lot of people listening who are like me, who have been lifelong people pleasers.
Right.
Our goal is to make sure that everybody else is happy, and that if there's a little bit of time left over for us at the end of the day, then we can have some of it, you know, to ourselves. Right. But everybody else has got to come first. And there's nothing wrong with being a servant leader. I'm not saying that at all, but when we spend all of our time doing everything else to try to please everyone else, often we find ourselves on the negative end, feeling resentful, because we spend a lot of time doing things that we don't want to do. And that's who I'm making the podcast for, because we solve for that resentment with intention, by being intentional, which means be deliberate about where you spend your time, where you allocate your time, and so on and so forth. So great answers to that. What does that mean for you over the course of your career? What have you seen that has worked to be able to leverage intentional leadership, being deliberate, to attract and retain good people?
Well, when it comes to retaining talent, you know, it is very, very competitive out there right now. It's gotten more and more competitive each of the last 5 to 10 years. And I mean, you'll talk to companies that will sit there and say they absolutely can't find the right people to do, you know, what they want to get done. And some of those same companies, though, are not giving their current employees freedom to operate. You know, they're micromanaging their top talent. They're not building any trust. They don't have any shared vision and goals. And you know, when that's going on in that kind of environment, you're going to lose your top people. And, you know, there's no room then to be creative.
Yeah.
So what I have done, and this could be a little selfish, but I am only going to work for certain people that I trust, mm-hmm. and certain companies that have products that I want to represent. So, you know, you have to really, really glean out, you know, if you're going to spend, you know, this much of your day, and then the course of your career, you know, you better be with people that you want to share that with, that have a shared vision, yeah. and shared goals, and work with people that have a simple approach. And yes, there needs to be some accountability, but, you know, you want to have a fun factor in there as well. You know, if you yeah. can't have a little fun along the way, and, you know, it really all starts with good communication. And like I said earlier, building trust. And those are the things I think right now, once you start creating that type of culture and the word gets out, then those employees actually come to you. And that's what I've found over the years. You know, there's people that are way smarter than I am, but they may not treat their team with the same level of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're a servant leader and you're being there for your team and doing what it takes so that they have the tools to be successful, then your company's going to be more successful. You're going to have more wins. And that's really what it's all about. It took me a number of years to figure that out, but the last 20 anyway, that's worked yeah. really well for me. And I've had a lot of success with, you know, a couple different companies in mm-hmm. that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great answer to that, by the way. And when you're boiling it down to like, hey, if you show up as a more intentional leader, do these things, you're going to naturally attract that talent. Right. That wants to be a part of that. There's going to be people, your reputation will precede you. There's going to be people that want to come to work with you. There are going to be people right. that go with you if you go somewhere else to work or build your own company or whatever the case may be. A few things I want to pull out of that, Brett. First thing is, if I'm in that leadership role, and we work with a lot of people in our Thriving Leader Program and Ag Leader Summit, who struggle to let go of the task, who struggle to let go of the thing because, hey, at least when I do it, and maybe I'm stressed out, maybe I'm working 18 hours a day, but at least when I do it, I know that I don't have to do it over. I know that the customer is going to be happy with the end result. I know that it's going to get done right. How do you get your ego out of the way? Do you have a protocol for that? How do you let go?
Well, when I was younger, I didn't want to give up control either. And, but then you learn that you're never going to hit all the marks. And, you know, I wore a lot of hats with some of the roles that I've had. I wasn't just the sales manager, but I was also doing the marketing. Yeah. You know, so once the business grows to a certain level, then you have to go out and hire a marketing manager so that you can actually be a better people manager for your sales team. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes, you know, giving up that control is the best thing for everybody in the organization. And so that's one of the key things that I learned, you know, a number of years ago. And when you do that,
yeah,
everything runs a lot smoother.
It does, doesn't it? My wife and I are going through a training right now to learn what it takes to truly build a kingdom focused business and yeah. With kingdom principles. Right. And right. So obviously we reference biblical examples and mm-hmm. there's no greater example of delegation than Christ himself.
That's right.
Here's a man that built a team,
That's right.
Right. And equipped them Right. And said, go out and do. In fact, one of the things I love, like he gave them permission, like, hey, if they reject you, right, shake the dust off your sandals and leave. It's okay.
Go the next time.
Right. And so the greatest delegator of all time. Now look at the result.
Yeah.
You know, and here you are not willing to not you specifically, but here, you know, here's somebody listening to this podcast that's holding on to, some task today that at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you'll never remember that you ever did it, and nobody will care who did it, how well it got done. Right. Well, but you're stressing over it, causing yourself ulcers today because you don't have enough time and because you failed to be intentional enough to delegate that to someone in the past, train someone in the past how to do that for yourself.
Another example, the business grew to a point where we had 12 or 13 sales reps. And, you know, it got to the point where you weren't giving quality time, coaching, spending, doing the ride-alongs with the biggest customers, being there, you know, to provide the support that was needed. So I went and hired a regional manager, another person, gave up part of the team, you know. Yeah. Now that was hard when I was younger, but it was the right thing to do for the business, the sales team, and our customers. And sometimes, you got to be ready and willing to face reality. And, you know, if you do it in the right way, everybody on the team is going to actually embrace it. You get their buy-in before you even do it. And so I've been very lucky along the way, you know, and depending on what the role was, whether it's managing people or managing large accounts, you've got to pull other people in to everything that you do. Today I brought along one of the product managers with me on my sales call. Mm-hmm. And we certainly had a much better call because, you know, we worked together on this. We prepared before we went in. We were ready. And the results then were so much better with two of us than just myself.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. There's one other piece about this that I wanted to dive into. And, you know, you talked a little bit about this, but I want to put it into a framework that people can apply to their own life and business. And, you know, maybe I'm in that first 20 years, not the back 20 years of my career. And I want to take the advice he said, which was to work for people I trust, represent products that I like, represent, people that I trust to put my best interest forth. What advice would you give somebody who's maybe 25 to 35 and they don't have the experience level to know intuitively yet who that is, how that is? Because, you know, let's be honest, there's a lot of big job offers out there. There's a lot of nice salaries, nice bonuses, nice pickups, right? All the things that can, they try to woo you over with. And let's try to break that down for people, because I think that would be a really valuable resource.
Well, I think one thing, don't jump at the first opportunity. You better do your homework. Shame on you if you didn't, find out more about the company, more about their leadership, and more specifically, more about the person that you would be reporting to. Mm-hmm. And, what is their culture like? What is important to this management team? What are their 5-year goals? You know, what will I be asked to do? Will I be given, freedom to operate, or am I going to be micromanaged every day? And if you dig a little deeper, even though you may not know as much about the company, a lot of times you can at least find out more about that person that you'd be reporting to. Talk to former employees, talk to people. I've always, I don't want to say demanded, but I've basically have said, if you want me to work for your company, I'd like to talk to at least 2 or 3 people that report to you. Mm. And that's shocking to some, managers when you bring that up, and then they know that you're serious. Yeah. And I think they will respect you more if you actually make that request. Now, it's interesting. Sometimes I know their sales team, you know, pretty well, and it's always interesting to see which two or three people they put out in front of you, you know, and that says a lot about, you know, the management. I've always been a very strategic person. I learned how to play chess when I was young. Sure. So I'm always thinking four or five moves ahead. So, you know, I don't have to be the smartest guy in the room. I just have to, you know what other pieces or players are on the board. And then where they're at on the board. And then I'll know what moves to make. So I would tell people, make sure you do your homework. Don't just, there's a lot of shiny objects out there, you know, and when I look at people's resumes, I'm shocked how much turnover there is, how everybody has 1 and 2 year job stints, you know, for throughout their career. Well, a lot of times it's when they were in their younger years, but I think in some cases, to be honest with you, it's people that have not done their homework, you know, as well. And, you know, they're happy to have a great job, a great salary, and, you know, a shiny new pickup. You know.
That's where, I mean, that's another reason that this podcast now exists, is that there's two sides to that coin, right? One side is the employee willing to be in pursuit of maybe some shiny new things, and hopefully they're going for the right reasons, right? But we all know that there's a lot of people making lateral moves in the industry right now, just to, you know, just for a little bit more, because it is so competitive. It's a supply and demand issue. And on the other side of that, right, is, you know, is that, are the leaders of that company becoming those intentional leaders that we would all crave to work for real? Right. Not just because they're paying me to be here, but I would like, I would go and work with Brad because I like what Brad stands for. I like how intentional he is. I like what he's capable of doing. I know that he's going to develop me into that next best person. I tell my team, I said, listen, nobody's a lifer. I understand that, but help me make this the best place that you can be to develop you for the next 5 years. And then we'll see.
Right.
Hey team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this and our coaching programs, and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that, and your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. So, all right, that's fantastic. All right, let's talk a little bit about culture. You've been around a few organizations, helped develop several. So what... A lot of people give it lip service. I think most people do a poor job of executing against it, personal opinion. But what's your take on how important culture is? With how does intentional leadership play into building a great culture?
Well, you know, at this stage of my career, I think I've been through five mergers, acquisitions, different things. And, you know, I've worked for the major companies. And then I've worked for startups and everything in between. And, you know, I think really if you want to have a great culture, then there needs to be more openness. There needs to be You let people have an entrepreneurial spirit. You let people do things different. You're encouraged. It's even celebrated when you're different, even on your own team and your own company, or doing things way differently than your competition does. And, you know, having went through a merger about a year ago, we're a much bigger, more successful company now that has a lot broader offering. And, you know, they had to build the trust, you know, with the new organization.
Right.
They started doing monthly commercial town halls. So it's really kind of a vehicle for ideas and best practices within the organization. You know, we do weekly sales and marketing and PD calls where all the stakeholders are together each week. And it's not just, you know, talking about what we do as far as the key priorities. It's what are the challenges? What are the successes? You know, does anybody have an idea that to fix this particular issue? And then, you know, when you do have meetings and you all get together, you know, let's have some fun. Let's do some team building. Let's celebrate the successes that we have.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that I think are really, you know, important. And then, you know, what has came out of this, you know, another layer of support was put in place for the sales team. You know, now our company has product managers, which they, you know, being a smaller organization, you didn't have those people before. So, you know, now I've got somebody to, you know, go shoulder to shoulder with out here in the field. And I don't have to do as much of the field marketing and then even developing, you know, marketing materials, even though I'm not on the marketing team, because they need people with experience. So, and those are the things that happen when, you know, you have a successful, thriving business that understands that, you know, you're a bigger company now and you have different needs than you had 12 months ago.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you brought up the concept of, you know, allowing people to be entrepreneurial, right? Which to me means, you know, take some risks, come up with some new ideas, see if you can find a way to pencil that out and make that make money for the business, have that be beneficial to your customers, et cetera. And I like the term for a lot of people to just as a framework for people to think about themselves is intrapreneurial. You know, when I was a kid, you were entrepreneurs for people that couldn't get jobs. Right. And over the last 30 years, it's sort of flipped. And there's this, we sort of idealize the entrepreneurial lifestyle. And now you have gig economy and work from home and a lot more flexible situations. But the idea, you know, to be an entrepreneur, I think most people don't understand about when you're the entrepreneur, you maybe don't know how much you get paid this month. Right? You have all the risk. The weight of the world is 100% on your shoulders. I know this well because this is what I've been doing for 15 years. So I know how that works. I know what it's like to be up late at night trying to figure out how to make payroll. That's a tough place to be, right? Mm-hmm. Borrowing money just to skate through a month. Like I've had to do all the things in order to just still be in the game 15 years after I started. But from an, if you think about yourself as an intrapreneur, you have that, like, you know what you're getting paid every other Friday based on the current salary. And you just have this, the resources of the current company, hopefully the support of the people around you to run with an idea. And I would encourage all intentional leaders out there to encourage your people to be innovative and all those things. But, you know, people that are thinking about, hey, like, I want to go do that entrepreneurial thing. I'm going to quit and go do my own thing. That is the right move for a very small percentage. But entrepreneurial, I mean, anybody can do it. Even if it's just a small thing where you can be entrepreneurial in very small ways, you can do it in very big ways. It just depends on your personality and your dreams. And you mentioned that. I kind of wanted to mention that too, because since we're talking about culture, I want to create a culture that people want to be those entrepreneurs and help us create new programs, new learning resources, new ways to serve clients and that, you know, that benefit the business. So let's talk about challenges and wins and things over the course of your career. Brad, what's been the biggest challenge you've had to overcome?
Well, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I mean, one of the biggest hurdles or challenges that I had as a young manager was, giving up control. You know, I like to, have a really strong product that you put everything behind and make sure that it's perfect. And, if you're going to be a good intentional sales leader, you've got to give up that responsibility, and you've got to let more people on your team be involved. And so what I did was then gave people more responsibility, gave people projects, things that I was currently doing, whether it was forecasting or inventory or, bringing more people onto a national account call, so that they got the experience, so that they could elevate their game. And then they would be more intentional then with the other people within that distribution company, because they were more, knew what the communications were, knew what leadership was saying, and then could better serve them and their people out in the field. So, I mentioned earlier the need to hire a marketing manager, to hire other regional salespeople so that, the customers would be better served, the sales team would be better served, and then my blood pressure would actually go in the right direction down.
Yeah.
and that took a while to figure those things out, but that's what I think has been probably my biggest hurdle. Back in the day, especially.
Absolutely. Definitely can understand and I can relate. What's been the biggest win?
I've been really blessed because I spent 10 plus years in the crop protection business, 10 plus years in the seed business, and then I spent 15 years here in the biological space. And I've had big wins in each of those different segments. But one of the funnest wins I had goes all the way back to my crop protection days when, American Cyanamid was really flying high and had huge market shares. But they sent me up to the Dakotas where things weren't quite as rosy. And that was my first management position, and had a more seasoned sales team that they'd seen a lot of turnover in managers and then never really got the focus because of that turnover. And, we came in there with a lot of new ideas, and I know some of these people thought I was crazy initially, but we took the business from $20 million to $60 million in a 3-year period.
Wow.
And, it really came down to doing things totally different than they'd ever seen in the past, and then even went in a different direction than what the company was going at the time. I moved everything to a team budget. Everybody said it wouldn't work. We had team resources that everybody was shared. And then, the best ideas moved to the top. And guess what? The growth took off, especially with the largest accounts.
Yep.
And then we had customer-specific programs where those resources then were used to fund and fuel the growth.
Yeah.
And then we got everybody on the team more involved in the largest accounts. And, we focused on building people's skill sets up, building their confidence, and getting them ready to take over my role or to move somewhere else in the company or to go ahead and move on with a bigger role in some other organization. So it was quite a learning for me. And they tolerated, a newer manager, but they didn't know what was going to happen next. So there was both that excitement. And once they saw that it was contagious, then suddenly everybody bought in and said, hey, this is more fun than what we were having before because we're winning.
Yeah.
And it's better for our customers, and it's also better for my bank account. So
the win-win-win.
Win-win-win. So if you're coin operated, which most salespeople are, then what's not to like? So again, I've been really blessed in the same thing in the seed business, and had a lot of fun now the last 14 years in the biological space as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to that just really quick. And so what was the, and then I'm thinking about somebody listening to this, who's going through, they need to overhaul a team. They need to get a team producing at a higher level. And you know, everybody always has ideas. You're going to get, you're going to get pushback. People aren't going to believe in your concept. How'd you push through the barrier until you got the adoption and got the buy-in?
We built trust. Everybody on the team met one-on-one with their spouses, got to know everybody really well, got to know their kids. I played Santa Claus at the Christmas party, did very, very specific things for people throughout the year. And they saw that, first, if they see that you care, you've heard that whole analogy before. Then that's when things really take off. And this isn't just another person that's going to come up here and leave us in a couple years. They're in it, to make sure that we all win. And so it was very, very rewarding, from that standpoint. But I really got to know everybody really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Including the spouses and their children. And we spent time together. Then the team looked forward to those events that we had where we all got together. And then we even planned fishing trips together, rewards that we had for the milestones that we were, making. And, people looked forward to it and had zero turnover during that. That period as well, because where else could you go and have that amount of fun and be rewarded for basically doing your job?
There's a purely relational component to what you're talking about. The common thread through everything you've talked about today is boiling back to those relationships and getting to know. And I know some people do naturally do a great job of this because they like, they're family oriented. They want to know about their employees' families. They want to know what's going on. But I'll be honest, I think it's getting more and more rare. I think there's a lot of young leaders, and part of it's the world we live in. We have this Zoom and Teams focused world where we do a lot of these virtual meetings. You and I are doing that right now. Would be a heck of a lot more fun, although less efficient and a lot more cost on my part to produce this podcast if I were to fly you into Pittsboro, North Carolina, and come to my studio.
Right,
which would be fun, and eventually I hope I can evolve this resource to that state where it can support that. But I guess that would be the one thing that I'm trying to focus on it too. And my company's always been virtual, but in our pre 2020 team, we had 6-7 of us around here full time, couple of part timers. But I would bring everybody to Omaha every 90 days. We didn't have an office, so there's no overhead in the office.
Right.
Arena. So I'd allocate that to plane tickets. And we'd bring everybody together. We'd do a workout together. We'd rent some office space somewhere or a hotel room or whatever, like a conference room or something for a day or 2 days and do what we had to do. And then, dine together. And man, we really got to know each other really well. Everybody really felt like everybody really had each other's backs. I'm rebuilding that now in the post 2020 version of our business. And it's so crucial, so crucial. One last question I want to get to before we're definitely over time already. So, but take your time with this. You talked about playing chess You talk about playing four or five moves ahead. What is required to be able to do that?
You got to block out time to plan. And, you know, most people let everybody else dictate their time. And if you can block out so many hours a day to, you know, the key projects that need to be done. And then also on a weekly basis, I like to, like, you know, normally at this time, I would probably be at home wrapping up the week, but that's when I do my, you know, what are my next four or five moves ahead? Like mm-hmm. you're playing chess. And so in this case, it's going to have to be done on Monday, probably. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to let that go because, you know, if I don't go ahead with that, because it's been in my wheelhouse for so long,
yep.
that you can't let that go. And, you know, if you say, well, I'll do that next week, and, you know, it will never get done. So, you know, I like to put time aside each week actually to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great advice. I mean, that's just blocking, how simple, not easy to execute, but simple, yeah. The concept to just block some time, and it's okay to do that. Whereas most of us are out here just reacting to everything that goes on throughout the day. And we say, oh, I don't have time to sit down and do that. No, you do have time. You just let everybody else tell you what to do with your time.
That's right.
So you have to really, that's part of intentional leadership is doing that. It's something I'm working really hard on. My wife and I are working really hard on in our respective businesses to be looking ahead. And I'm having the conversation with all my coaching clients right now. It's December as we record this. This probably won't come out till February or March of 2024. But in our conversations lately with coaching clients, it's like, hey, what story do you not want to be telling on December 8th, 2024? What story do you not want to be living in anymore?
Right.
And they'll say things like, I don't want, my pipeline just doesn't have enough people in it. You know, I don't know where I stand with this customer or that customer, or I'm overweight and out of shape, or whatever their situation is. And then we say, okay, great. This is what we get to go to work on. Right. So what gets to happen first, and then next, so that we don't have to be telling that story anymore. But Brad, this has been fantastic. You are a wealth of knowledge and experience, and I encourage more people to learn from you and go check out what you guys are doing at ProFarm. Any last thoughts that you'd like to impart?
No, I think you mentioned the word just a few minutes ago, keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I've tried to do all these years. You know, if you're intentional about what you're doing, you keep things simple, you communicate, you plan your work and work your plan. You've heard that before. Everybody talks about it, but nobody does it. Nobody pulls the business plan out of the bottom drawer or opens it up and reviews it, mm-hmm. you know, every few weeks or months, you know, to make sure that they're on track. So I actually put markers in Outlook that remind me to do certain things at certain times. Not just, you know, a key project that somebody else wants me to do, but things that I'm doing for myself, for my family, you know, for my faith, you know, whatever those things might be, you know. But you really got to get out there and do the work, you know. I drink a lot of coffee because there's a lot of time spent on the road. You can't develop the business if you're going to sit at home all the time.
Yeah.
You won't really get to know your customers. And quite frankly, that was the reason that I'm talking to you from a hotel room on a Friday afternoon
versus right.
Doing it from my little studio or my office at home, which would have been a lot more comfortable than this.
Mm-hmm.
But the results that I got today, one of my biggest days, one of my biggest weeks, it was all worth it. And so the plan finally came together. So
love it. Love it when a good plan comes together and it works in our favor. So, Brad, thank you for being on, and appreciate your wisdom today. Thanks for being with me.
You bet.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.